CBS Eye on the World, I'm John Batchelor. From the surface of the planet Earth, we're headed to the moon, thanks to Slim. Bob Zimmerman is here. He keeps the website Behind the Black reporting on excessive success in reaching orbit, the moon, and beyond. And right now, the Japanese are on center stage. Bob, what is Slim? Good evening to you.
Good evening, Jim. SLIM is a Japanese lunar lander. It's the Japanese first attempt to land a unmanned craft softly on the moon. It was launched a few weeks ago. It's been in Earth orbit, slowly raising the Earth orbit. Well, this past weekend, it fired its engines to do what the Apollo missions named the translunar injection. This is the engine burn that takes it out of Earth orbit, or at least heads it for the moon. And SLIM is taking, SLIM is an engineering mission. It's not a science mission. It's once again, any time they're going to try to land first time on the moon, they're really trying to just figure out if they can do it, such as India's attempts and the private company in Japan. iSpace attempted to do it. Now Japan's space agency, JAXA, is attempting to do it. And so it's an engineering test. And one of the engineering tests they're doing is actually trying a somewhat unprecedented way to get to the moon. For example, India's Chandrayaan-3 spacecraft, it just kept raising its orbit, until it entered the lunar sphere of influence, and then it shifted to a lunar orbit. And that was also used by Hakuto-R and Bereshit 1 by the Israeli nonprofit. SLIM is not doing that. SLIM is doing something I've never seen before. They raised their orbit so they're now going to fly past the moon, just like the Apollo missions did. But they're not good. That first flyby is not when they enter lunar orbit. They don't have an engine, I think, slow enough, powerful enough to slow them into lunar orbit. So instead, they're going to fly past the moon and use the moon's gravity to adjust their Earth orbit to bring them around a wide-sweeping orbit. I've got a map on Behind the Black so you can see this. A wide-sweeping orbit that will then bring them back to the moon at the right time, at the right speed, and in the right direction so that they can do their landing. And that's the other half of their main engineering goal. This mission's purpose is to see if an autonomous unmanned spacecraft can land precisely within a very small target zone about 300 feet across. Most target zones for unmanned craft are much, much larger, by 10 times larger. If you can tighten that target zone to very small spaces, you can then land an unmanned craft in much rougher terrain, go places where you couldn't go before. And so that's what this is testing. And so that's their plan. It'll be several more months before they get to land on the moon, but that translunar injection worked, and they're on their way, John.
It occurs to me, Bob, that they're using less fuel, so they have a better liftoff, and they can use a smaller rocket or put more instruments on board. Is that correct?
Yeah, that's correct. The reason they do these kind of very complicated orbital maneuvers to get to the moon, taking much longer than, you know, a direct flight, which takes only a few days, is to save on fuel and therefore save on weight and provide capabilities to do other things instead. That's exactly right.
Far side of the moon, U-2-2 reporting. How's it doing, Bob? Healthy?
We do not know how U-2-2 is doing, but the Chinese had not posted any updates on U-2-2, its small rover on the far side of the moon, since January of this year. And then they suddenly did a release late September in which they posted a map showing the full present known route of U-2 on the surface. I've got that posted on Behind the Black, so you can see where it's been and where it's been going. It's in Chinese, but there's not a lot of text on it, so it doesn't matter. The issue question now is, why did China post nothing about U-2-2 in the last 9 months, 10 months? That it could be they're having problems with it. It very well could be. It's not, you know, the thing's been up on the moon since January of 2019. It was only supposed to last a few lunar days or nights. That's a couple of months. It's been there now for almost 4 years. And so if it's having problems, that's not to be unexpected. It could also be that the Chinese, who are non-transparent, just decided they don't need to tell us anything anymore, and they're not. And they're giving out less information. So we don't know. know if U22 is in trouble or not, John, but there's indications it might be having issues.
Do I remember correctly, Bob, that they used a relay communication unit that was in orbit around the moon? Is that the one?
That's correct. On the far side of the moon, you've got to have a satellite in orbit to relay the information from the far side up to that relay satellite and then back to Earth. And they have one in orbit, and it's functioning. So, yes, that's true.
Major thruster problems. That's not a positive. What's the mission, Bob?
Psyche is a mission to go to the asteroid Psyche. Psyche is an asteroid that is a metal asteroid. There's not a lot of them. It's thought to be the interior core of a broken-up planet. You know, the central core is heavy metals. All the metals fall to the bottom. And that's what they think Psyche is, but we don't know. And there's not a lot of asteroids like this, so this mission is going to go. Last year, it was supposed to launch a year ago, but their software got delivered late, and it wasn't ready in time. So they had to delay it for a whole year. And they're getting ready to launch. They were getting ready to launch on October 5th, but then about a week ago, they delayed the launch for a full week. And we now found out why, because 2 weeks before launch, they suddenly discovered that the software parameters for firing the attitude thrusters on the spacecraft were incorrect, and that if they fired as planned, the higher temperatures that could cause damage. Oh, my, if this happened once they launched and they didn't know this, they'd destroy the spacecraft. Oh, that sounds great, doesn't it? So they very quickly figured this out under doing some initial tests, and they figured out how to change the parameters so the problem won't exist. Instead of firing at 80% power levels that could cause too much heat and damage, they'd fire at 30% power level. It means the burns have to be longer, but they won't damage anything. And so, thank goodness, they rescheduled for October 12th for a launch, and Falcon Heavy will put it up in space, and we hope there's no other hidden mysteries here with Psyche. Psyche management has been, unfortunately, not great, and we hope that they don't have any of the problems.
Have they got a closing window, Bob, or do they have time here?
No, they don't have a lot of time. They had a window, I think, that was from the I don't remember the exact length. I shouldn't even guess, but there is a window. They have to get it launched within a period of time. Yes.
We go to a cool picture, although it's on the surface from Perseverance's point of view. What has Percy found, Bob?
This is not the first time this has been done, but it's actually not even a picture. It's a movie. I linked to the movie because it was hard to embed it. But Perseverance spotted a Martian dust devil moving across the terrain about 2 miles away, about a mile, 2.5 miles away. And so the movie's kind of cool to watch. And you click on the picture on my webpage, you can go see this short movie, and you can see the bottom part of this dust devil, mini tornado, working its way across the flanks of a hill in the distance. It's kind of neat. It's not the first time that either Curiosity or Perseverance have picked up pictures, made movies of dust devils, but anytime they do, it helps them get a better idea of the atmosphere of Mars and its weather, basically.
It's really cool. Wasn't there a commercial in like the 60s or 70s that had something like this, Bob? You know, some Mr. Clean or something.
But that was tornadoes on Earth.
Yeah, I understand. It's very cool. All right. Yeah. Percy, well done. Sand for Martian giant dune. This is cool pictures. What am I looking
at? Yeah, this is actually this is cutting edge research the scientists are doing that I picked up by going through the Mars Reconnaissance Orbiter. New pictures had come down. Surrounding the North Pole of Mars, the ice cap, is a gigantic sea of dunes. It's called Olympia Undei. It's really gigantic. It's the biggest sand dune sea that's known in the solar system. I mean, it's much bigger than the Sahara. And where did all the sand come from? It appears that based on the wind data that we recently obtained using dunes to determine prevailing winds, that this sand comes from under the solar ice cap, because the solar ice cap is a mixture of sand, dust, and ice. And so they took a picture of one of the sources of this, and it does appear that the prevailing winds pull out dust from the lower levels of the 7,000-foot-high ice cap and the dust that's impregnated within it, and pull that dust out of the eons, and it gets blown out into this giant sea. And that's what we seem to have here, and that's kind of cool, John. We're getting an idea of how the sand seas, the dune seas on Mars are formed.
All right, Hubble taking a backseat to the web, but here comes Hubble with some new information about a supernova. What has it found, Bob?
What scientists did is they took images by Hubble collected over 20 years to create a movie of a single filament from the Cygnus Loop supernova remnant. This occurred about 20,000 years ago, and so you've got an expanding cloud of material with lots of thin filaments. And they focused in on one filament over the last 20 years and took pictures, and the scientists created a movie. So you can see how this filament is expanding outward from that explosion 20,000 years ago. And that's, I think that's really cool. This is, I think, in some ways more cool than the Dust Devil image.
It's a very cool image. I recommend everybody click on it because you get some sense of the scale here. And the web, all right, and the big guy on the block here, takes an infrared look at Saturn. I've noticed that they've turned the web on all of the planets. What do we see that's revelatory about?
Yeah, this is using the infrared capabilities of Webb. They took a look at Saturn and its rings, took a bunch of images, and the infrared data not only tells you something about the internal circulation patterns there, but you get spectroscopy, which tells you a lot about the materials there, including ethylene, benzene, methyl, and carbon dioxide. And it also tells them something about the weather patterns over time. The northern winter has now reversed to northern summer, for example, and this data tells you that. Once again, it's not optical. Infrared looks at different things and therefore gives you a greater depth of knowledge.
Bob Zimmerman, Behind the Black. I'm John Batchelor.
Stay tuned for more of CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.